ばすればや。Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 12, Rahugana Converses with Judd Bharat, Text 7. So chanimam stram adikasya dinan vishyan hinnan niranugrahosi janasya guptasmi vikattamano nashobase vridha sabhasudrishta Shochani mamstram adikastadinan Vishyanagrihnan niranugrahosi Janasya goptasmi vikattamano Nashobase vridha sabhasudrishta Shochani mamstong adhikastadinan Vishyanugrihnan niranugrahosi Janasya goptasmi vikattamano Nashobashe vridha sabhasudrishta Vaishnavis, Shochan, lamentable, Iman, all these, Tam, you, Adikashtadinan, poor person suffering more pains because of their poverty, stricken position, Vishya, by force, Nigrinan, seizing, Niranugraha asi. You have no mercy in your heart. Janasya of the people in general. Gopta asmi. I am the protector, king. Vikattamana. Bragging. Nashobhase. You do not look very good. Vridha sabhasu. In the society of learned persons. Drishta, simply impudent. Translation. It is a fact, however, that these innocent people carrying your palanquin without payment are certainly suffering due to this injustice. Their condition is very lamentable because you have forcibly engaged them in carrying your palanquin. This proves that you are cruel and unkind. Yet due to false prestige, you were thinking that you were protecting the citizens. This is ludicrous. You are such a fool that you could not have been adored as a great man in an assembly of persons advanced in knowledge. Purport. King Rahugana was proud of being king, and he felt he had the right to control the citizens as he liked. But actually, he was engaging men in carrying his palanquin without payment, and therefore he was causing them trouble without reason. Nonetheless, the king was thinking that he was the protector of the citizens. Actually, the king should be the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For this reason, he is called Naradevata, the Lord among human beings. However, when a king thinks that because he is the head of the state, he can utilize the citizens for his sense gratification, he is in error. Such an attitude is not appreciated by learned scholars. According to the Vedic principles, the king should be advised by learned sages, brahmanas, and scholars, who advise him according to the injunctions given in the Dharma Shastra. The duty of the king is to follow these instructions. Learned circles do not appreciate the king's utilizing public endeavor for his own benefit. His duty is to give protection to the citizens instead. The king should not become such a rogue that he exploits the citizens for his own benefit. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that in Kali Yuga, the heads of government will be plunderers and thieves. These thieves and plunderers take the money and property of the public by force or connivance. Therefore, it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Rajanyayar Nigrinayar Dasyu Dharmabhi. As Kali Yuga advances, we can see that these characteristics are already visible. We can certainly imagine how deteriorated human civilization will be by the end of Kali Yuga. Indeed, there'll be no longer a sane man capable of understanding God and our relationship with Him. In other words, human beings will be just like animals. At that time, in order to reform human society, Lord Krishna will come in the form of the Kalki avatar. His business will be to kill all the atheists, because ultimately the real protector is Vishnu or Krishna. The Lord incarnates and sets things in order when things are mismanaged by so-called kings and heads of government. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yada, Yada, Yadharmasya, Glanir, Bhavati, Bharata. Of course, this takes many years, but the principle is there. When the king or governmental head does not follow the proper principles, nature deals out the punishments in the forms of war, famine, and so forth. Therefore, if the government head is not aware of life's goal, he should not take charge of ruling the people. Actually, the supreme proprietor of everything is Lord Vishnu. He is the maintainer of everyone. The king, the father, and the guardian are simply representatives of Lord Vishnu, empowered by him to look after the management and maintain things. It is therefore the duty of the head of state to maintain the general populace in such a way that the people will ultimately know the goal of life. Natevidu sartakatemi Vishnu. Unfortunately, the foolish governmental head and the general populace do not know that the ultimate goal of life is to understand and approach Lord Vishnu. Without this knowledge, everyone is in ignorance, and all society is crowded with cheaters and cheated. Translation again. It is a fact, however, that these innocent people carrying your palanquin without payment are certainly suffering due to the injustice. Their condition is very lamentable because you have forcibly engaged them in carrying your palanquin. This proves that you are cruel and unkind. Yet due to false prestige, you were thinking that you were protecting the citizens. This is ludicrous. You are such a fool that you could not have been adored as a great man in an assembly of persons advanced in knowledge. Om Gyana Chimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunatananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Go Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama, Rama Hare Hare. The foremost concern of government, according to the Shastra, is to give protection. If we think about the situation of the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Kauravas versus the Pandavas, an interesting principle is that neither side disputed the principle of giving protection to the people. Duryodhan and company were actually competent administrators, and they actually felt, Arjuna's enemies actually felt, that we can give better protection to the people. So there was a rivalry, a competition amongst the warrior administrators who could give the best protection. Now, of course, Duryodhan and company, they did some dastardly activities in their attempts to get rid of the Pandavas. That was very dirty and underhanded politics. Interesting perspective. Srila Prabhupada would always give us interesting angles to cause us to think deeply and not just be locked in to our conventional perspectives. So when devotees were telling Srila Prabhupada about, you know, many years ago, Nixon, and how he was impeached from the White House because his boys broke into the, you know, opposite party's headquarters and, you know, stole secret documents. And so when the people found out, you know, they dragged him down. So when Prabhupada heard about it, he said, oh, yeah, okay, so they broke in to the headquarters and stole some documents. These are just Kshatriyas doing their thing. Vying for power. Of course, other times he said other things. But still, Duryodhan was vying for power. And so he did all kinds of dirty things. Actually, what was, in the eyes of a Vaishnav, a devotee of Lord Krishna, what was Duryodhan and company's main problem? It was only one thing. They're anti-Krishna. So Krishna made politics to get them out. Now people will object. How can Krishna make politics? Well, if there's anyone who should be making politics, it's the Supreme Ishwar. What people are actually saying when they protest like that is, what's Krishna doing meddling in our affairs? If there is a God, he should just be worshipped and stay out of things. We should sing him nice hymns, offer him some rituals, and he shouldn't bother us as we try to enjoy our senses. But when the problems come from our enjoying our senses, then we blame God for those problems. So that's the purpose of God. You blame God when the inevitable catastrophes from your sense gratification appear. So that was Duryodhan and company's only fault. They're anti-Krishna. They're actually competent administrators. And they actually felt, we can best take care of the people. Therefore, we should be in control. When we look at this conversation between Judd Bart and Rahugana Maharaj, we're seeing a subtle twist. First, Judd Bart presents the pure spiritual platform. He says, you're saying that I may be fatigued, you're saying I may be old, but actually this is nonsense talk because I'm not the body. Fatigue and old age, whether that is true or not about me, it's just a fact of the body. Therefore, no intelligent person speaks like that. As we heard yesterday from Amala Bhakta Prabhu, the verse where Judd Bart just does a in-depth analysis of the situation. Look, we have here palanquin carriers whose bodies are made of transformations of earth. We've got a palanquin that's made of transformations of earth. And on the shoulders of the palanquin carriers is this palanquin, and on the palanquin is the body of a so-called king. So basically, we're just talking about different transformations of the earth, whether we're talking about the palanquin carriers, the palanquin, or the so-called king himself. But the real fact is that within the body, your lordship, he first tells him, your so-called king, this is your lordship. Your lordship is situated. So, Jed Bard is skillfully getting to the core issue, that actually you're just indulging in a lot of external talk and giving so much importance to the external platform. Earlier, he said, earlier, for example, Rahugana said that he's referring to Jud Bard's previous instruction. You told me, O Yogeshwar, O master of mystic power, yoga power, you told me that the fatigue resulting from labor, it's appreciated by direct perception, but actually there's no fatigue. It simply exists as a matter of material formality, in other words. So this is confusing me. On the one hand, you say it's directly perceived. On the other hand, you say it's not very important that this fatigue is directly perceived, and it's just a external formality, which and it's not the real kernel of reality. This point that Jud Bard is making, and Rahugana Maharaj is repeating, gives us the conclusion that simply understanding the activities of the body, its pains and pleasures, is not real knowledge. We give it some credit, just like you give some credit to a child talking. When the child, amidst all its jabber, says something that's factual, adults are happy. Oh, you said something that shows you're going to have some brains. So all that discussion of knowledge on the external platform has a place, but it's considered to be childish. It's not the serious perception of life. Once Jud Bard establishes this point, that you're just giving me a lot of bodily talk, you know, king, servant, fatigue, old age, don't you know anything better than that? Once he presents that point, he then flips, just like Bhagavad Gita does. Bhagavad Gita alternates between the material perspective and the spiritual perspective. One minute Krishna is chastising Arjuna, you're not the body, sochanam vasochastam, pragyavadam shabhashase. You're lamenting for what is not worth lamenting. That which is real has no cessation. It has no beginning or end. So let's talk about something real. But then Krishna flips and says, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Fight and do your duty. Happy are those Kshatriyas who get a fighting opportunity unsought for, because that's the gateway to the heavenly planets. Often people become confused by this, by Krishna going from one plane to another in his presentation. His presentation, that is, goes from one plane to the other, from the pure spiritual plane to the material plane. And of course, when Krishna is speaking about the material plane, he's speaking through the lens of Varnashram Dharma, which is a material system without a doubt, but it's Krishna's material system. Therefore, we take it seriously. Who can give a better sociological perspective about how to organize things in the material world than the Arjuna of the material world? But sometimes Krishna is speaking on that topmost material platform, which is Varnashrama, And sometimes he's speaking on the pure spiritual platform. And people get confused. That's why we have a lot of service in guiding people to understand Bhagavad Gita. Especially these days, you'll find most people can't even read a book from cover to cover. That creates more service for the devotees. I would say it's not that we should say, well, people don't read as much anymore and their minds are agitated by TV and movies and internet. So that's the way it is. Such a situation, if it's true, provides the opportunity for the devotee to do more service. I can't count the times that I have to tell people. On this trip to the USA, I spoke at Columbia University, New York University. I went back to Yale University for the first time since graduation. And I spoke at University of Toronto, another University of Toronto. A few days ago, I spoke at Cal State. And it's amazing how many times I have to explain to people who have a Bhagavad Gita, don't jump around. You start the book from the beginning, and then you go to the end, you see? Now, you might say, well, come on, Maharaj. How many years can we go on talking like that? You know, don't you get tired of it, you know? You start Bhagavad Gita at the beginning. And then you're going to find things you don't understand. There's no doubt about it. You're going to find things that challenge you. No doubt about it. Things that don't coincide with your current cultural perspective. But just get to the end and all the pieces will fall together. So I don't know how many times I've said that. So you may say, well, doesn't the devotee get tired of that? No. Why should a devotee become tired of assisting Krishna in his succession? Doing some humble service. As stated at the end of Bhagavad Gita, hearing this conversation, my hairs are standing on end. I'm getting a thrill every moment. So, what is tiring about assisting in that process of people worshiping Krishna with their intelligence by going through Bhagavad Gita? Okay, it's true. Back in the 60s and 70s, when so many Bhagavad Gitas were distributed, it was not unusual at all that a young person would get a Gita and read it in 3 days and come running to the temple. So it could be said that perhaps times have changed. There's not that huge countercultural tidal wave that's washing people into our doors, But should the devotee be discouraged by that? No, we should think, these present times give us a chance to do more service. We have to work harder. That's great. We can't rest on our laurels. We're honored to assist people in understanding Prabhupada's books. We take any misunderstandings they have as an opportunity to do service for the super succession. Otherwise, what are we going to do anyway? We're happy Krishna's given us these circumstances for increasing our service. So just like people get confused as Krishna jumps from the material plane to the pure spiritual plane in Bhagavad Gita, similarly, people can become confused as Rahugana is confused about Judd Bart's jumping around from the material plane to the spiritual plane. To be able to keep up with that, to keep up with those maneuvers, it takes at least a mode of goodness brain. And people don't have a sattva-gun brain. So therefore, they always get confused, like, well, aren't we the body and the soul? And you always hear this again and again and again. It's a good excuse to give up preaching. How many times have I heard this point? You mean, I've been doing this for 40 years, hearing people say, aren't we the body and the soul? Therefore, we should indulge in the body and indulge in the soul. You can take that point of view. Look, I've got better things to do in my life than hear this stuff year after year. But then you think of Srila Prabhupada's example, who so patiently explained again and again to us the simplest things. You wonder about that kind of heart of a person from the spiritual world who so patiently and caringly and lovingly tended the little seedlings in his garden. And when you think about that kind of attitude, that example, you can't give up. I remember at Srila Prabhupada's first disappearance ceremony in 77, and some of his godbrothers came to speak, and one of them, I'll never forget, he said, "Oh, Bhaktivedanta Swami, or Swami Maharaj, as they referred to him, he's done a great thing. But I myself did not have the taste for associating with such low-class persons." Sometimes in the stress and strain of living in this world and trying to be Krishna conscious, what to speak of trying to help others to be Krishna conscious, we can forget about that heart, that deep heart, that spiritual world heart of compassion Srila Prabhupada demonstrated. You can read it, of course, in Markine Bhagavad Dharma, the prayer he wrote aboard the Jaladuta. How will these people ever become Krishna conscious? Look at the Rajagun, look at the Tamagun. How is it possible? But then, Krishna, because you're the supreme mystic, you're the Yogeshwara, I know you can make it possible. Therefore, I'm begging you to make my words suitable for their understanding. The Prabhupada said, "I'm going to teach Bhagavatam. I'm going to teach Bhagavad Gita. I'm begging you, Krishna, to make my words suitable for their understanding." So he's demonstrating to us that our outreach activities depend on our connection to Krishna. We may try this technique, that technique, but the main technique is what Srila Prabhupada stated. "I'm begging you, Krishna, please empower my words. Make my words suitable for their understanding." Here we have a situation where Judd Bard has thoroughly thrashed Rahugana Maharaj intellectually. That you're just talking about the body, you're just talking about the material platform. Then suddenly, Judd Bart jumps onto the material platform with full force and says, "It is a fact, however." In other words, Rahugana, when you're talking about me, and when you're talking about these other palanquin carriers, and when you talk about yourself, you're an illusion because you're just referring to the body. But now, okay, let's get into the body thing. Let's get into the material facts, which I've already labeled as just formality and external. But anyway, let's turn the tables. Let's get into it. It's a fact that you're causing suffering to these people. It's a fact that these are innocent people carrying your palanquin without payment. See, Judd Bart's even getting into economic justice. He's getting into all the issues, you know. Their condition is very lamentable because you have forcibly engaged them in carrying your palanquin. This proves you are cruel and unkind. Yet due to false prestige, you are thinking that you are protecting the citizens. This is ludicrous. How to understand this? It's showing the complete vision of the Vaishnava. The Vaishnava understands that the priority is the spiritual world. At the same time, the Vaishnava acknowledges that there is suffering on the material platform. So the devotee can shift perspectives from the pure spiritual perspective, which is the most important, to the material perspective, which has importance because proper organization on the material plane allows people to more easily understand the Supreme Absolute Truth. The Vaishnava thinks, for myself, bodily pleasures and pains, they're not very important. But then she looks at the suffering of the people and is not oblivious to it, not callous to that. The devotee knows that all the suffering on the material plane is due to forgetfulness of Krishna. So Judd Bart is accusing Rahugana Maharaj that you haven't organized your society properly. Therefore, you are causing suffering unnecessarily on the material platform. It's not the most important platform, and I've already said it's external, it's a formality, but still you're doing it. People, unless they have purified consciousness, it's hard for them to understand this. As I said, again and again, at preaching programs, even at the best universities, will get the same question. Well, aren't we both the body and the soul? And don't we feel both spiritually and materially? And shouldn't we enjoy spiritually and materially? It's very difficult for them to shift perspectives and shift viewpoints and keep up with a devotee's full and complete and holistic vision of how matter and spirit are acting together even though they never touch each other. People will say, you're being dualistic. We've heard this before, that there's a spiritual thing, there's a material thing. How naive is that? Two energies that are totally different in their effect. A pure spiritual energy, and then you have a material energy. How do such distinct categories of energy exist if they're so different? They don't understand, of course, that both the energies are related in that they come from the same source. I think it was Mukunda Maharaj who coined the term, explaining, we're not dualists, we're emanationists, in that both energies emanate from the same source. Therefore, we're not hung up about the materialist accusation that you've just given us two completely distinct things that just kind of appeared out of nowhere, and those things have nothing to do with each other, matter and spirit. If someone has the purified intelligence, that means the assistance of the Vaishnavas, they can understand Judd Bart's shifting the playing field. It's not bewildering for them. Just by people, of course, purchasing a Bhagavatam, that gives them some understanding power. And when they associate with devotees based on their purchase to find out more, then their understanding power increases. So, what apparently is bewildering from the standpoint of bhakti is easily understandable. Judd Bart has compassion for all the aspects of existence, spiritual and material. At the same time, he stresses it's the spiritual that's important. I was explaining last night at Suresh Krishna's apartment how devotees aren't ungrateful for someone helping them materially. We're not fanatics. If I'm sick and I go to a doctor and he cures me, and then what do I tell him? Well, anyway, you know, we're not the body, so. It's all illusion anyway. You know, it's all external. It's just a formality, and you know. No, I'd be very grateful. Thank you, doctor. You know. But I wouldn't think that my real problems in life have been solved. That is the difference. We see things in their proper perspective. I thank you for taking care of my machine, but I'm not the machine, and my real problems in life still haven't been solved. My real problems in life are I can't hear the Hare Krishna mantra. You got any medicine for that? In my... we're getting late here. But in my presentations at universities in USA and Canada, I've been just explaining to people that the current problems are not climate change or water shortage or energy shortage or the Middle East conflicts or nuclear proliferation. The real problem can be seen on two levels. And let's start with the first level. The first level of the real problems is institutional failure. Your unnecessarily complicated lifestyles, social functioning has created such complex problems that your institutions can't solve them. Your social institutions, your political institutions, your economic institutions cannot handle the problems of the day. The problems of the day are so interlocked, interrelated, multifaceted, multidisciplinary, multi-everything. And your political institutions, economic institutions can't handle that. They just can deal with like one departmental approach. And because everyone is selfish, they can't actually come together and even see the interrelated problems, what to speak of, solve them. So on the first level, you're just actually having political and economic institutional crisis. It's not about climate change. It's not about, you know, the recession. It's not about the Middle East. It's all about you've created a civilization and that's such so problematic. Now your very institutions can't solve the problems. I quote to them something, an honest statement by the failed presidential candidate in the last election. He was asked, what about climate change? He said, well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, politicians deal with issues that are hitting the people in the face. The people are wanting to know about money, jobs. Climate change is not hitting them in the face. So how can you expect politicians to really deal with that? And remember, when the climate change does hit you in the face, it's too late to do anything about it anyway. So what do you want out of us? You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah. The people don't care about it. And when they do care, because, you know, it's right there pounding them in the face, it's too late to do anything about it anyway for the government. Too late for the government. So we might as well just do nothing. Brilliant, huh? So that shows you institutional failure. If a problem doesn't show up in the next financial quarter, if it doesn't show up in within the 2 or 4 or 6 year term of a politician, forget it. And then I take it the point deeper to the second level, that beyond the institutional failure is the personal failure, the individual failure to understand what is our identity, the failure to control the mind and senses. So it's a good time for preaching Bhagavad Dharma. It's a good time for presenting the knowledge that Lord Krishna has given us. And as one famous American analyst said, never waste a good crisis. Devotees, we're not afraid of crises. We like them because, you know, it shakes people up and they start to think. Just like now, Rahugana is in crisis and he's humbly inquiring from Jadbar, what's going on? What am I doing? I can tell that I'm doing something wrong. Can you please explain your words? So we want to take advantage of any crisis situation so that utilize it so that people's hunger for real knowledge can be satisfied. We don't want to miss this opportunity. All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Glories to Prabhupada. So I take questions. I think I don't want to, you know. All right. If there. All right. Any questions? Okay, I guess I'm off the hook. And I caught my Prabhu. Yes.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for a very wonderful class. Just a comment about your point earlier. You mentioned about preaching and how devotees have to approach the conditioned souls and try to get it through to them, that Krishna consciousness is so important. I was listening to a lecture yesterday, and Srila Prabhupada was discussing the social condition of the world. This is 73 in London. And Prabhupada was talking about how things are so topsy-turvy, and our position as devotees is that we can't rectify it the way that the Lord would do it in previous ages, where he would come and annihilate the demons. And Prabhupada continued in a very wonderful tone of voice, in a very humble way, that our position is just to come as beggars. So I was appreciating your comment in how we should try to preach Krishna consciousness. We can't just kill them or rectify it in a drastic way like the Lord would do, but our position is just to come as humble beggars and encourage them. Thank you.
Yes, that was Lord Chaitanya's demonstration in dealing with the Chankazi. The Chankazi was wondering, what's going on? Formerly all the Hindus were so intimidated, they were just doing the bare rituals without any potency. Now they're all fired up, they're all enthusiastic. Where are they getting this energy from? Where are they getting this enthusiasm from? And so he broke the kirtan drum, and the devotees went to Lord Chaitanya very, very disturbed. And Lord Chaitanya said, just go on with the Harinam Sankirtan. Don't worry. If they try to do anything, I'll kill all the meat eaters. So then in the purport, Prabhupada explains that. As we can see how Lord Chaitanya dealt with the Chankazi, he killed him with logic and reason. He actually treated the Chankazi with respect and then proceeded to dismantle all his misunderstandings. So even the devotees, when they got to the Chankazi's house, you know, they were quite, they were getting a bit passionate, you know. wrecking his house, you know, and wrecking his garden and, you know, making loud noises. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that Lord Chaitanya was quite cool and controlled, even though the devotees were losing it a bit. And so Prabhupada instructs that this is a good lesson for us, that in every situation we should always keep a cool head, as Lord Chaitanya demonstrated. But understandably, the devotees were, you know, agitated, you know, smashing the guy's house. And reminds me of what a temple president often has to do, you know, when there's some crisis, you know, and devotees get emotional, and they, you know, oh, we should do this, we should do that. Then you have this senior Vaishnavas and, you know, temple president is, okay, let's just calm down, let's proceed methodically. Oh, you're not acting quick enough. Smash him or smash that. So that example of Lord Chaitanya is to keep a cool head and kill a person or a situation with logic and reason and cool headed dealings. Yes.
Maharaj, in relation to your academic outreach, you gave us half of the picture. You gave us the
old quote. What was the first thing you said?
In relation to your academic outreach.
Okay. You New Yorkers. I talk so fast.
You gave us half of the picture. The questions that they ask and your response, but you didn't give us the conclusion. How do they react to your response to their questions?
Oh, I didn't want to. You know, I mean, you know, I was respecting your time parameters. You know, how do I react to how do to what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what do they say? Oh, yeah, read a book from cover to cover. It's always like that. Yeah, that makes sense. 90% of the time, they just tell you over and over again, I just jump around, find interesting parts, which of course is beneficial if you any page you turn to in Prabhupada's books. But we want them to have it, we're never satisfied. We want them to go deeper and deeper and deeper. So we use any excuse to say, more Krishna, more Krishna, more Krishna. Oh, you're jumping around. Oh, that's not good enough. You're really missing out on something. There's a lot more there if you just read it from cover to cover. Oh, really? Because the devotee is doing some service, trying to do some service, aiding the bhakti process. Therefore, Krishna takes note of such efforts. And I just frankly tell them, there are going to be things you don't understand. There are going to be things that challenge you. There are going to be things that don't connect with your current cultural outlook. But just get to the end and it will all come together. And give them kind of a challenge. They say, oh, yeah, don't worry. I'll hold back on my judgment so I get to the end. Okay, I can do it. I've got sense control. I can wait to the end before I flip out. We're never tired of compassion. Finally, I remember Srila Prabhupada, 77 in Mumbai. He just given his umpteenth example about how we're not the body. And then he said, you know why I can always come up with examples like this? Because I'm always thinking about it. Here, I'm always thinking about, Rasalila or, in the pastures of the cowherd boys. Here, the most exalted devotee says, I'm always thinking about it, how to preach we're not the body. So, we don't want to be more of a Paramahansa than a Guru Maharaj. And we want to take situations as an opportunity for us to show service to the specific succession. That's all. We're menial servants. We're peons. That is our glory. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada.